Hey, welcome to the new CNADHD podcast. I'm your host, Liz Lewis, and I don't want to produce another boring podcast. I want to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of living the ADHD life.
And yeah, I definitely want to have a cocktail while I do it.
As always, my goal is to bring together the best experts and the best information on ADHD and to make it accessible and actionable.
Today's episode's a long one, so let's get started.
I have a special guest today. Her name is Jacqueline Paul. You may have heard of her. Her website is called The ADHD Homestead. I have shared her work a lot. So if you follow me, you probably follow Jacqueline. We write a lot about the same topics. And I don't know, we have a lot in common. So Jacqueline, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing good. Sun's out.
Yeah.
It's a Thursday. Yeah.
It's Pi Day.
It is Pi Day. Yeah. Although in our house, we're especially nerdy, I guess. I've been informed that really we should be celebrating Tau Day and not Pi Day. I'm not sure the date on that one, but apparently Pi is out of vogue. But
well, my husband's a computer guy. And I don't know what Pi has to do with what he does, but he's really into it and he's into eating pie. So we have to take pictures with Pi, and yeah, it's a whole thing. As I've said, you have this amazing book. It's called Order from Chaos, and I'll link to it in the show notes. Isn't that exciting when I say show notes?
Show notes. Very official.
I will link to it in the show notes. So tell me first, though, before we talk about your book, tell me your history, your personal story with ADHD.
Okay. So I was actually not diagnosed per se until my 20s. But before then, I knew something was up. Something was wrong. So I personally have a terrible memory, but I still have all of my notebooks from since I started keeping notebooks. In high school, I was writing about these suspicions I had about having ADHD and this, research I was doing on my own about it. In early high school, I had a boyfriend who had an ADHD diagnosis. And so maybe getting to know him, sort of got the wheels turning for me. I don't remember what got me started on this. And then later on in high school, I saw a psychologist for a short while for, unrelated stuff. But I asked her about ADHD too. And she gave me this computerized test that was like a torture device for people with ADHD. I swear it was horrible. It was like numbers that you had to click when you heard or saw a number come up on the screen. Really, all you had to do was look at the screen for 20 minutes, pay attention, but that, hence the problem. This produced a pretty damning bar chart at the end. And then she was like, well, you have to decide if you want to address this medically or not. And I heard address it medically and just got totally scared off because I just supported a very close friend through a scary time with antidepressants. And any kind of brain related drug freaked me out a lot. So the psychologist said she thought that was irrational, but then she didn't push it with me. And I stopped seeing her shortly thereafter. I also asked my high school guidance counselor at some point about it. But she told me that a real evaluation, I would have to talk to my parents and my teachers and get their input. And that shut the whole thing down. I was totally unwilling to do that. That was that for a time. Elementary school had been kind of a nightmare for me socially. I hardly had any friends, tons of behavior issues. You can see all the breadcrumbs if you look at my report cards. My teachers said, I wasn't diplomatic with my peers. I had these outbursts where I'd lash out verbally or physically. I got in trouble for pushing a kid down on the ground because he butted in front of me in the gym line, that kind of thing. I just had no impulse control at all. And teachers actually commented on my report cards. I was very capable. I was very smart. I was in the gifted program. But sometimes I just didn't feel focusing or I made careless mistakes on my tests. I forgot to turn in my homework, even though I had done it. All these things that were like huge red flags. And it's funny, no one said anything at all. My guidance counselor, who I had lunch with once a week with this special group of kids who like all had behavior issues, but no one was asking like where the root cause of this was, right? It was just something that I had to learn how not to do.
This in the 80s?
No, it was the 90s. But yeah, like the early, when did I start kindergarten? 1990, I guess.
Okay.
And like really, as soon as I hit kindergarten, it was clear, like I did not play well with others. And, you know, it was not a skill that I was learning. But so here's the thing. I coasted through school. Even now, but especially then, the whole educational system it caters to very linear linguistic thinkers. So the way that my brain naturally processes information is the way that the system wants you to do and think. So I didn't do poorly in school, like ever, because I didn't have to try hard. Like I could fake it and I made it and I was fine. And so I might've been victim to that whole, like, you're too smart. You're too smart to have ADHD kind of thing. Your grades aren't bad. You know, you get your homework done. Well, yeah, because I can do my homework in the other, in other classes. Like instead of listening in class, I can do my homework for the class that I just had. So, you know, I wasn't the kid who like was really like agonizing over my homework for hours every night because I could BS in. Everything didn't really fall apart until after college. Because if you're really good at figuring out the formula to get the A, and if you're really good at acing a multiple choice test, those aren't real world skills. And when you get into the real world, like there's no such thing as getting an A and there's no like multiple choice test. I don't know. I got along for a little while, but then I just kind of collapsed under the stress of everything. Like at work, like staying organized and being self-directed, you know, everybody thought I was so organized and such a good worker. And like, I have a good work ethic. I do. But everyone's high opinion of me, like stressed me out even more. Cause I was like, oh, it's only a matter of time before they find out the truth. Like that this is just like all going to fall apart. And like,
have you ever wondered, and I've been sort of accused of this and I've noticed it's in myself. Have you ever wondered, I'm a worker too. Like on the weekends I have trouble not working. Like
I work every day. Yeah. No, especially if you're self-employed. I don't know how to relax like at all.
Sometimes I think that is for my head, for my brain, maybe. That is how I overcompensate. Like I don't know what it is. I work harder. I can be really rigid.
Yeah.
And I think it's part of, for me, it's part of like overcompensating because maybe what I do, some people could do in like 20 hours a week. I don't know.
Yeah, I've wondered that sometimes. Like, you know, in a parallel universe, like, what would I have accomplished by now? I try not to think about it, but, you know. But, yeah, like, it was – so I did. I did well at work. I've always done well at work. And because it's, like – I mean, I hate to be all old school, like, child of the 80s about it, but it's, like, that's how I was raised, right?
Me too.
You know, but I was, like, taught that, you know, that work ethic was so important. And, you know, my parents both worked really hard and – so I wasn't going to do bad at work, but my jobs had been like things that sort of worked with my ADHD too. Like I worked at a really super busy Staples copy and print center and it was just the best days were the days that just I like for 8 hours straight, like nonstop. And I would have to figure out like what order to put things through the machine in to like, you know, and how to give like time, like, you know, and get everything done. And like my coworkers hated me because they said I made them look bad, like, cause I worked too hard. That job, I felt so competent But then having like an office job that was very self-directed, I was just like waiting for everybody to find out what a mess I was. And then like at home, I just had such an epic fail at keeping it together. Like I'm trying to like opening the mail, couldn't do that. Paying bills, you know, just like not leaving dishes sitting around for weeks. You know, anything that you could imagine about maintaining like a house, it just was so bad. And like at that time it was still common to get like, you know, paper checks from people and stuff. I mean, I would forget to take them to the bank and be like until they expired. And
I do that too. I do that now.
Yeah. It's the only thing that saves me now is that I have like my bank, I can like scan the checks or I can take a picture with my phone and I can deposit it then. But I have not been to the physical bank and like,
yeah. My husband has taken over that. So if my grandparents in their 90s send a check to my my husband has taken over the scanning of the check.
Yeah. Yes. When you have to divide those responsibilities, because, you know, I took over all of the bills, like all of the money.
I could,
you know, and my husband is the primary wage earner, but that is where the like money stuff starts and ends for him. And he once referred to me as the, he said, oh, well, you know, you definitely are the person to handle this thing that we were talking about, you know, because you're the one in our relationship who views money as a finite resource. And I was like, yes, I do. And it's important for someone to think of it that way.
Right.
but I like, you know, two people with ADHD in a marriage is hard. And, you know, in my 20s, when all this stuff was sort of crashing down on my head, we both had untreated, undiagnosed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I at least knew that I had it, but he didn't really. And now looking at his family, I'm like, oh my goodness, how did you guys not know?
Well, but, I might want to talk about our marriages, our primary relationships. Yeah. I'm in a mixed marriage. My husband is definitely not ADHD. That's a whole other thing. But I have another
question. Yeah. No, it's interesting though, because it's not like, and people love to talk, generalize these terms about like people with ADHD are like this.
Right.
They are not. No, people are individuals and ADHD affects these executive functions and it affects it differently. You know, it has a different impact on each person. And, you know, the awareness is key because when we didn't know what the problem was and we didn't know a lot about how our brains work, et cetera, it caused so much tension in our marriage. And, you know, I just remember having these fights about like maintaining the house, paying the bills, like doing this, doing that. And it just, and I mean, I have that emotional hyper-focus time blindness thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, once you get me into a conflict, I just lose sight of everything outside that conflict, like absolutely everything. And I, you know, I will lose sight of the fact that like, there is a relationship outside the conflict. And so, and now I know that I also have, you know, medication that helps with that, but
yeah,
you know, it's, but the, I mean, the first time I took a stimulant medication, like blew my mind because just, it was, first of all, it was like, there was this space that opened up between like my reaction to something and my response to it. Like all of a sudden I had a choice and I was like, oh, okay. And I realized like I had a rough week or something. And I, like at the end of the week, I was like, oh, but a week is only a week long. Like Monday will happen and then we can like try this again. And that just, it was, and it sounds weird that that perspective would come from like just actually altering your brain chemistry, but it totally does. And so, you know, that was a game changer. And, and it really happened because I read, what I was talking about, earlier, Gina Perez, You, Me, or Adult ADD.
And is it's you, a, me, or, yes. Yes.
Yeah. And her book, so she wrote that book. It's targeted at the spouses of the people with ADHD. And so I read that and then I read it. I slipped it to my husband, the audiobook, and I was like, just, you know, to help understand me a little better. which the actual effect of that was, he was listening to it and he was like, oh, this is me too. And also, I'm so sorry. Like, for all, you know, because he just thought I was the problem. And it's that classic ADHD marriage thing of, I don't have these problems with other people. I just have these problems with you. So you must be the problem. And, you know, but your marriage is not like your relationship with your coworkers that you, you know, so it's,
yeah.
But that book changed everything for us. And I recommend it to people, like, you know, married people who are going through this, because it really, like, it can save your marriage. Like, if you don't,
I think that book, so, yeah. I think that book gave my husband some perspective as well.
Yeah.
It took him a little while to get through it. But once he got to, like, there was a section that he got to, that he was like,
One, it's all these things that you don't realize that ADHD is contributing to, because the research and the writing for so long was about, like, middle and upper class white boys.
Yeah.
Definitely. And so, and everybody else was just like, well, what's wrong with you? So, no, that book, that was really incredible for us. And it was like the start of my whole, you know, journey with this stuff.
Obviously you, in your 20s, at some point you got married. How did you, I think of you as a writer, because my familiarity with your work is your book and your website. How did that transition happen?
Well, so a writer is sort of the identity that has stayed with me for the longest, since I've been writing since before I went to kindergarten. And I always saw myself as a fiction writer. And that nonfiction writing was just sort of a way to pay for the fiction writing. So after college, I did 2 years of service with AmeriCorps. So I worked for a nonprofit and I continued working for that organization, for several years after that. And I was doing human resources and IT support for them, office management type stuff. And, but I was writing fiction. I started writing fiction again at some point, there.
That explains so much. Because whenever I read your website, my website, I feel like is, you could tell I was a school teacher. It's like instructive. Okay. Your website, I feel like you're telling a story. This explains so much.
I'm always telling a story. Yeah. And so when I don't believe in having regrets, but this is one where I'm like, oh, I was really stupid. I was working for a nonprofit. I was being way underpaid for the level of work I was doing, which is just the nature of nonprofit work. No fault of theirs. But my husband said to me at some point when I was, you know, venting about something, there was a big drama that happened at some point. And, I was talking to him about it and he was like, if this is not a good place for you to be, you don't have to work. Like, just quit, because we're not living off of your income. And I was like, yeah, I do. You know, because of course I have to work. And obviously I do, because I'm just giving myself a job. Like, because I cannot not work, because I don't know how to relax. Like, I'm guessing that not working would involve relaxing. And I don't know how to do that. We had agreed long ago that when we had a child, one of us would stay home. We wouldn't pay for full-time childcare. And he was making, I think, almost three times my salary by the time, like, we were expecting our son. And so it was going to be me. Also, I'm much better at creating, like, structure and routine than he, like, I was the one with the skill set to do that piece. And so the household management piece, which ironically has given me all this material for my nonfiction writing. But yeah, so I quit my job like a couple months before my son was born, to finish this novel I was writing. And I always thought I would go into freelance, you know, nonfiction writing, which I never ended up doing. And somehow at a writing conference, I had this idea, which is what conferences are good for, ideas. I had this idea for the ADHD homestead. I wrote that down and I was like, okay, this is, I'm going to sit on this for a while, make sure I'm actually going to do it. And then I promised myself I would have like, I forget whether it was 1 or 2 months worth of posts, like already ready to go before I launched the site. Cause like you have ADHD, you don't want to start a new thing because you're like,
yep.
But what if I just like, not even what if I fail? What if I just lose interest in doing it and I can't sustain the work anymore? So I was very hesitant about that. And, you know, most recently last year with this, you know, my app project that I've started, I did the same thing. I didn't let myself touch it for a long time because I wanted to lose interest. It was like, I was giving myself the challenge, like,
yeah
come on, you're going to forget about this. It's not going to seem sparkly anymore. You're not going to like it. Like, and just to wait for myself to give up, because if it was going to happen, I wanted it to happen before now that I have a platform, before I said, I'm going to develop an app, guys. And then not do it. Cause I don't like to look like a flake, but yeah. So, then I started this blog and here I am. I mean, I've had the blog for 5 years. Like, I've now published a book with it. Like, and I've realized now I'm a nonfiction writer who like also does fiction, if that makes sense. I always thought like, oh, fiction will be my full-time writing identity. And then, you know, nonfiction will be my moonlighting thing, mm-hmm. but it's flipped. And it took me a long time to realize it. I've just like in the past year been like, oh, it flipped, you know, this is my thing now. And there's a whole community that's built around this blog, and you know, that is now my thing. And it's like at the core of my business in a way that I didn't expect, but yeah.
I'm so fascinated by this because the homestead has been around, the ADHD homestead has been around longer than mine. I didn't do mine until the summer of like 15. So I'm only 4 years. Yeah. I'm about 4 years in. But one of the things I always say is, this is the only thing I've ever stuck to.
Yeah.
This is the only thing I've ever stuck to. And I don't know if it's because I have all kinds of theories about, well, maybe it's because I had skin in the game, because I had a web designer help me, because I didn't know how to build a decent looking website.
Oh, so see, that's actually good if you don't know how, because one of my claims to fame is I can throw together a website and get it online in like an afternoon.
Are you serious?
I have this like blog graveyard of blogs that I, you know, used to do.
Where have you been my whole life? No.
No, but it's horrible because there's no barrier to entry. You have an idea one morning and you're like, yeah, I'm going to write this cool blog. And you put it together and there it is. You know, and then it's like, oh, you know, a couple months later, it's like, oh, I don't actually want to do this. But yeah, no, this is the one I stuck to. And part of it now is the people who write to me to thank me for what I do. And this community of people who I can tell, like, this is a necessary and important thing that I'm doing. So now even when it gets hard, I won't give it up, because now I feel like I have people sort of counting on me, which is weird. You know, it feels a little egotistical to say that, but you know, what's really made a difference to me in the past couple of years is the people who have written to me, not like public comments, but sent me an email to say, thank you so much for putting into words something about myself that I never understood or knew how to talk about. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, it's kind of a privilege to be able to do that. And, you know, I realized that my business now is kind of about potential and how many women like me are out there, you know, who, you know, if I can help like 5 people better reach their potential in life, I mean, we need all of the human talent we can get right now. And there are a lot of people who have a lot of potential and just don't, you know, haven't been given the support or the information that they need. And so that's a big motivator now. And it helps me, you know, keep Because it's not always easy. It's pretty, I mean, it can be a pretty thankless endeavor to, you know, it's,
well,
do something like this, you know.
I was going to ask you because I just had a meltdown a couple weeks ago because I've been doing this for years. And I told you, I have been dumping money and I call it my family's money, you know, resources, yeah, emotional and financial resources into this for 4 years. And when you say thankless, I know what you mean. Because sometimes, you know, I get warm and fuzzy emails too. And there are days when I'm so grateful for them. And I'm so grateful, yeah, for the community I've built. And then there are days when I look at my bank account and I go, what am I doing? Like, have you lost? Are you just pursuing this passion project because it gives you warm fuzzies, Liz? Like, what are you doing? So I know exactly what you're saying. But I know the answer to this question. Your website is the base of your business. But tell us about the other arm that I'm interested in is your book. Tell us about Order from Chaos.
Oh, yeah. Well, so as you know, after a certain number of years blathering on a blog, you know, it's you start to see what your top content is, first of all. And you also realize, like, I could not adequately cover certain topics in blog posts, which I try to limit on the word count. And I've just lately been leaning into the fact that I write long posts, and you know, that's the way it is. But I sort of wanted more space to talk about creating an organized life and what that means and what the challenges are for people with ADHD and sort of why we try and fail to get organized so much. And that wasn't going to fit in a bunch of blog posts. And so I wanted to write a book. And so I did a Kickstarter for it as sort of a proof of concept. I figured if I can fund what it's going to cost me to do this book on Kickstarter, then first of all, I already have my first X number of readers. By the way,
that is brilliant, because whenever I do something like write a little ebook, it never occurs to me to do that first. Good.
The Kickstarter. Yeah. Well, because so the thing, and I of late have gotten kind of hooked on doing stuff I'm bad at, because, you know, and that's going to be a whole blog post coming up, is why I think it's so excellent for people over 30 to like practice skills that they've always told themselves they're bad at. But however, in terms of looking professional with a published book, I'm not a designer. I can't even put like match my clothes in the morning. So, you know, I had to pay somebody to, you know, design the cover. And, you know, people think of self-publishing as free, but it's, you know, if you do it right, it's not. You got to like pay like a full length book like that. Like, I'm writing a series of like, I'm calling them mini ebooks that are going to show up on the online store, on the ADHD Homestead, that probably, you know, into the spring. And those I'll edit myself, but like a full length book, you got to pay a professional editor. So anyway, I mean, there's a resource output there. And I thought, well, okay, if this isn't actually what people want, then I'm just going to have spent all this time and money on nothing. So,
yep.
And you I know, done. Yeah. And I've definitely done that too. And so I was like, okay, we got to, you know, I don't know if I'm willing to invest this much in something that I'm not sure. You know, so I did the Kickstarter, and then, you know, when the Kickstarter was, it was successful. And so, yeah, then I wrote this book. That's how I got there with the book. But things that people have talked to me about it are really interesting. My best friend and, you know, writing buddy since third grade, he's a philosophy professor now. And he wrote to me and he was like, wow, you know, the work that you're advocating in this book is really kind of incredible. Like the, yes, like investigating yourself, like knowing yourself and finding the like deeper reasons to do things piece, which I think is really important for anybody, but especially people with ADHD, because we're not gonna, I mean, look, I like, before I started all this, I couldn't even open my mail. you know, we know we should open our mail, but there, you know, there's a whole motivation structure there that is needed. So it, we need to feel compelled by something like more important.
And I love what I love about your book. And what I tried to, Jacqueline heard this already on Monday of this week, I decided that I should reread Jacqueline's book, which I know that's like, that sounds silly to say it. Like, why would you think, Liz, that you're going to do what you do every day and read this book again in a 3-day period of time? But I thought I would. But one of the things as I went through it again that I love is that it isn't just about like systemization and straight up organizing. It's really about the mindset. And we with ADHD, we have issues with that mindset. And clutter in our environment is clutter in our mind. And I kind of like the way you talk about, I call it, I wrote down GTD, getting things done.
Yeah.
How did that inspire you?
Oh, when I read, so when I was at my old job, my boss was, I worked in this office full of like really incredible women and with her at the helm, and she was such a, you know, an ADHD case, you know, before, you know, she was from a generation before anybody really thought about that stuff, but she read Getting Things Done and just really latched onto it. And she's like, you have to read this. And so I did. And it, I mean, a lot of people with ADHD sort of resist it because it is rigid. There are a lot of rules and it's hard. It can be very, very overwhelming. And a lot of my readers have said, I really want to do GTD, but I don't even know where to start setting it up, let alone maintaining it every day. But it totally changed my life because the whole philosophy undergirding David Allen's, you know, system is that you can't store anything in your brain. Like, you never trust your brain to store information. So his thing is, your brain is not for storing information. It is for ideas and problem solving and, you know, working with that information. But you got to store it somewhere else.
Oh my God, that's ADHD. Yeah.
It totally is. And so the people he's working with as clients that, you know, inspired this book are, you know, super important, busy people, like, you know, CEOs with really stressful jobs who are so busy. So, you know, they're under all this pressure. And so, of course, like, they need all this structure. And, you know, but really, like, just me with my ADHD, like, trying to, like, maintain a, at that time, 2-person household, like, that was way more than I could handle. And, but GTD was, like, that was the answer, right? Is that, and, you know, he talks, and there's this other book that I had read prior to Getting Things Done called It's Hard to Make a Difference When You Can't Find Your Keys. Mm-hmm. And both of those books talk about this baseline anxiety that you feel when you know there are loose ends that aren't controlled. So with Getting Things Done, like, if I know that there are responsibilities that I don't have a handle on, I like, and that was what untreated ADHD was too, is this knowledge that there's all this stuff that I'm supposed to be doing and I can't really grasp any of it. And I just know that I'm going to forget something important. It's not a matter of if that happens, it's a matter of when and how bad is it going to be. So the Getting Things Done philosophy of never store information in your brain, always store it in a well, like, structured system outside of your brain, it was a life changer. And so, I mean, I didn't reinvent the wheel with my book. I mean, there are a lot of people who are, you know, smarter and more qualified than I am who've already come up with pretty good systems, right? But what I was writing about was, you know, was, okay, so with ADHD, what's getting in your way? Like, what systems are out there that are going to be the right one for you? And what is getting in the way? And what are the challenges that ADHD brings to the table with this stuff? And how can you overcome that? because, you know, getting to know yourself and why things aren't working, you can craft a system that does work instead of just being like, oh, I really need to try harder, or I should be able to do this, or I can't even handle this, or all this like bad self-talk or vague, like try harder messages we give ourselves. I mean, it's about troubleshooting and figuring out the, you know, how to make it easier. Like, yeah. 'Cause you got to make it easy enough that you'll actually do it. I mean, and it's not just like, oh, well, I have ADHD, so I just like, this is the way it's going to be. Like, I'm always going to pay my bills late, even though I like, that's the thing is I've never been in a position where I don't have enough money to pay the bills. Yep. Like I've always been very anxious about money. So even when I wasn't making a lot of money, I still, you know, I could manage it well enough that I was never in a position like where I couldn't pay necessary bills.
Yeah.
But, you know, when there were then like two people with ADHD living in a house and trying to pay, like we paid stuff late all the time. And I think there are a lot of people who think like, that's just how ADHD is. Like, that's what it means. Like, you've got to accept, like, that's just what life is going to be like. And it's totally not. You cannot settle for that. And like, I will never be one of those people who's like, yeah, ADHD, like it's like, you're just different or it's a gift or whatever. I don't buy into that, but I also think, you know, you don't have to settle for a crappy situation.
Yes.
I mean, there are ways to get to know yourself and craft a system that will make those things manageable enough that you will actually do them. It's not impossible.
You just articulated like half of the stuff that I'm always trying to say to people, but you articulate it so much better. So if somebody wants to start, whether they're reading your book or they think they're just going to go it alone, I actually wrote down here, you had a really nice section in your book about rewards and motivation.
Yes.
What do you think like would help people get motivated to start with the organizational process, the decluttering?
So I think there is a rock bottom moment for a lot of people. And when it happened to me, and this is the Can't Find Your Keys book suggested this, that you sit down and make a complete inventory of everything that your chaos and disorganization is costing you. And when I made that list, like it was staggering. Everything. It was costing me everything. And that can be a really like sobering and overwhelming and depressing thing to do. But in terms of motivation, I have motivated myself with short-term rewards before, and I think we all have, but I think the most important thing to do is to think about it in terms of sustainable long-term change. So I am fine at like overworking myself for a short time to gain a specific reward. And sometimes we all have to do that, but we can't sustain it. We will burn out. You know, it's not just like, I want to like bribe myself to clean up the dishes I left on the counter last night by telling myself I'm going to like be able to watch TV afterward. Like I actually want to build a satisfying life. And like, that's not just about the dishes yesterday. That's way more of a long game. So if anybody is looking to tackle something like this, because it is overwhelming, I think it's important to think about what is your end game? And you know, how does it tie into your values? Like what kind of person do you want to be for yourself, you know, for family, whatever. So with the dishes, like whatever, my mood is way better when I come downstairs to a clean kitchen in the morning. So that's one motivator. I keep my house tidy because I will go bonkers and yell at my family if I don't. But I also like have this deep value about being able to welcome people into my home. I really want to have that house where all the, like the neighborhood kids are going in and out all the time. You know, where like I can host an impromptu like gathering with friends. And I've done that. Like I've I had that house. You know, that's that kind of reward is so much more than like, oh, well, now I can eat my ice cream in front of the TV because I did my chore. Like, if you tie it to your deeper purpose, it kind of reminds you why you do the thing, even if, like, because it can seem like a waste of time, right? Like, well, why make the bed? Because, like, I'm just going to sleep again and again tonight. Like, with my five-year-old, I, like, if I give him a chore that's tied to a reward, if the chore is tedious enough, he'll pass up the reward. He'll be like, well, I don't care. I didn't want that anyway. I'm okay with not playing Minecraft today because I don't really feel like putting away my laundry. And adults will do that too.
Oh, we bargain with ourselves all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And like adults will totally do that. So I don't know. I think it's more healthy to building these systems that make your like everyday life management stuff easier. That is sustainable. Like bribing yourself to tackle something big and intimidating. Like you can only do that so many times before you wear out. But like you want to lower the impact of that stuff and like make it possible. So like, that's another reason that I don't have clutter all over the house is that like, I won't clean if I have to move stuff to clean. Like, and so I'm not going to tell myself like, oh, well, I just have to try harder to like clean every week. No, like if I'm not cleaning something because like I have to move this other thing to get to it, like that other thing is out of the house. Like I'm just getting to get rid of it because like cleaning around it is a problem. And like, that may sound like a little crazy, but I'm not willing to make things hard so difficult that I won't do them because I have this value, like, you know, and it's, you know, whatever the value is, like being reliable, you know, like trustworthy, like, you know, all these things. There are a lot of stupid chores that seem pointless that actually tie into our deeper values, and just making that connection helps it feel meaningful. And instead of just being like, oh, this sucks, I don't want to do it.
I agree. And I tell people a lot, like, what are your values? Value-based decision-making, you know?
Yeah.
When people are telling me, oh, I'm doing this and that, I'll be like, well, does that align with what's really important to you? Like, does playing on Facebook align with what's really important to you? No, your family's really important? Okay.
Yeah.
But once you know that why, how do you remind yourself of it? Like in the moment when your kid is... I don't know, yelling or leaving stuff around the house and it's Tuesday afternoon and you're just fed up with the whole thing. How do you remind yourself?
You know, like it's funny that you bring up like the kid not doing stuff and like yelling, and you know, that totally happens, like, because, and I, you know, recently I got sick. You know, I had like bronchitis for a week and I just didn't like, I wasn't able to keep on top of everybody. And like the house got so messy and I lost it. I was like, you guys, I feel like anytime I get sick or incapacitated for any reason, no, like the house just is a mess because nobody cares as much as I do about the house staying clean. And my husband looked at me and he was like, you know, like, I'm sorry that that's true, but it is true. Like, we just aren't as invested in that. And I was like, but you know, but it's true. Like for, in terms of mental health, they can exist in a different environment than I can and be okay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I remind myself sometimes by like, you know, in the moment it is easy to forget. And sometimes I do, but you know, that time, like after I do fix things and it is nice. And that feeling that I get, that's like, so calm and focused.
Yeah.
Like I really try to, and cause it's hard to do this when you have ADHD, like pause and actually like acknowledge what you're feeling right then. Like this feels good. Like, or when, you know, when I will resist going for a run, but while I'm out running, like I feel so good. And I'm like, okay, I have to like stop and notice this, like notice that I'm feeling this way.
Yeah.
And be like, yeah, okay, so this is what I want. Like, this is the thing that I'm chasing after. And like, you know, even when things like, or if the house does get messy or, you know, whatever, I don't go running for a while. Like, you know, actually sitting down and facing how I feel, because I feel different. and not beating myself up over it, but just like allowing myself to acknowledge that feeling too and know that like this is a result of a decision that I made. And that's, I mean, that's years of work to like have self-awareness. Because I mean, I feel like people with ADHD often develop like mature self-awareness late, if at all. I definitely know people much older than I am who haven't gotten there yet.
Oh yeah.
But you know, just like really sitting with your feelings and like your current state and, you know, just acknowledging what, you know, if it's because I haven't been maintaining my physical surroundings appropriately, like, you know, really acknowledging that and also forgiving, like being compassionate. And because it's that black and white thinking that happens. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, well, you know what? Like now the house is messy. And like, you know, see, I've failed at that. You know, as though that's a permanent state. And right. I do talk about this in the book too, about how it's really like, you can't judge yourself on how many times you like fall off the wagon. Like what is really going to determine your quality of life long-term is how you react when you, cause we all will like go off the rails sometimes, right? Like, you know, I'm not at inbox zero every day. In those times of failure, like that's the other thing, is that you need to have a system that you can restart. Mm-hmm. And you need to be willing to do that and just be objective about the fact that like, okay, like this is a part of the process. Like falling off the wagon is a part of the process.
So,
I got it. So then now I have to get back up and just try again. And this is not a permanent state. Like the failure is not a permanent state. And that was a huge realization for me. Like the first time when I learned that.
It's interesting because I'm always telling people it's not the situation itself. Like it's not the messy house. It's the way you're thinking about it. Like, and the thing about ADHD, and I don't know if you've noticed this in your people, is there's like some of us are fully aware and we know that we need to really listen to our thoughts. We need to be really self-aware about why we're thinking the way we're thinking and what meaning we're drawing from this messy house in this moment. Yeah. But the other side of it is I know a lot of people that in that moment, instead of feeling the feelings, they would numb out in some way.
Oh yeah.
Whether that means just going to Facebook for the next 3 hours and pretending, like just forgetting, or it could be anything. Some people eat, you know, there's a lot of different
blame shifting. I have a whole post about blame shifting that I wrote that for someone who like I care about a lot, who wrote to me and said like, this person in my life is making me feel horrible and I don't know what to do. And so I wrote and the title of the post, like blame shifting, like what to do, like, or when someone you love puts it all on you or something like that. But that, yeah, like some people, that's how they respond because they cannot deal with their own feelings and their own like shame and insecurity. And you know, instead of being able to be with that, they turn it back on people close to them. And they blame other people, and not in a conscious, calculated way, but like it's a self-protection. And yeah. And so there's that, there's like just ignoring the problem, you know,
We have an avoidance thing. A lot of us can be avoidant of a lot of different things. So if you have systems, if you've systemized this for yourself, then you do have a sort of a touch point to go back to.
Mm-hmm.
To start, say you've been sick for a week and your house is a mess.
Yeah.
And since systemization seems to be, and it's almost like habit formation. Like if we have a touch point, a place to start, and we know what that is, it seems to be a little easier for us. Like in the same vein, tell me about your app, because does your app help with the systemization a little bit?
Yeah. So, my plan for it is, it's going to be based on getting things done, that whole sort of ethos. And it'll provide like a one-stop shop sort of, you know, like a main screen that says like, all right, here's, you know, stuff that's happening soon. and, you know, here's some like important stuff that's got to get done. And then, you know, you can then say, you know, say, okay, like, what should I do now? I have 5 minutes. What should I do now? And it'll help guide that decision making, and it'll build in a guiding sort of coaching element to help cut out those like really common mistakes with getting things done that sort of sabotage it from within. But what will really set it apart is sort of that coaching aspect, and also that it will give nudges. Like, for example, if you haven't checked off anything on your next actions list for X number of days, or if you haven't even opened up your next actions list for a week, you know, that it would pop up a little, you know, notification at the top thing and say, yo, you know, and then do, you know, sort of guide you through a getting unstuck, because it's that troubleshooting piece, that I do outline it in the book, but I want to, and it's not going to be in the like very first beta version of the app, but over the course of like people using it and seeing, you know, where do people fall off the wagon with it? You know, how can we sort of code that troubleshooting process like into, you know, a helper section of this app? Like, you know, because even just having a notification that says like, hey, you know, you haven't opened this, or like this project, you've had this project open for 6 months. So like, let's look at that. You know, is there a next action on like a next thing to do on the project?
I would have something with the actions. Like what is the next action?
So yeah. And the next action. So, and that's one of the things that like, that's going to be one of my priorities, is dealing with the, you know, so-called next actions in an app, because so the next action as defined by, you know, getting things done is the very next step that you can take on a project. And that means that, you know, you, as long as you have the right environment for it, you have all the information and all the resources you need to get it done. And it is one thing. So, there's somebody I want to write, have like co-write a blog post with me about eating disorders, in people with ADHD. Like I could put, that's a project to do this post. So maybe I put in as a next action to email her about doing this post, and then that sits. And then the app is like, hey, this project has been open for 3 months and you haven't completed any actions on it. So here, like this, so this thing, email this person. Is that really a next action? And it's not really. Like the next action is for me to outline my ideas for the post, or maybe think about what I want to ask her in the email, because I want to email this, you know, email a co-author of a post and suggest something very specific with a timeline. And I want to know, like ask them something very specific instead of just sending this general, does this sound like a good idea to, you know, the reason that we don't do things though, is we write the next action as email so-and-so. And really there's like a task that has to happen first is I have to sit down and outline my ideas for this post. And before I loop in another person. And the reason I haven't been sending the email is that I don't actually know what the email is going to be about. And that's part of the like constant work with getting things done, is when we write a thing on our to-do list, oftentimes it's like a bunch of things rolled into one. Yeah. And so we have bad working memory, right? Like people with ADHD cannot have more than one thing in mind at once. We try to put another thing in, the other thing falls out. So it's so frustrating. But if I look at this thing like, oh, you know, send this co-author an email about this post, like I will never ever do that task because it's actually like three tasks and I cannot think of all three of the tasks at one time. And so, like, and it's, there's stuff like that in like every project. And so, you know, but I think that's one of the things that people struggle with the most, because you want to write the thing on the list that's like, this is what I want to check off. Yep. Send the email. But okay. Like, you got to take notes about your thought process first.
I'm listening to you talk about this. And I've had on my list for about a week and a half, maybe 10 days. I need to, about this podcast, I need to email. And this is what I wrote down. Email Sari Solden and Dr. Michelle Frank about their book.
What does that mean?
That is very non-specific, right?
And so your brain looks at that and is like, okay, what else have we got on the list that we can do?
Well, and I look like at it every day and I'm like, am I afraid to email them? I don't know. And then if I do email them, it has to be a really good email. And I feel like I should be very specific, but the book hasn't even come out yet. So what do I write about? Like, da, 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 da. Like all this stuff happens in, you know, 2 seconds in your head. And yeah. I look at it and I move down to the next thing.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
Because you can't think of all that stuff at once. Like, so, you know, it's, it like becomes its own little project. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I want to try to do, is have like, you know, guided steps to troubleshoot the, because it's like the same problem that keeps cropping up. It's not like every time we struggle with something, like it's a different problem. Like a lot of times it boils down to like a few major pitfalls that I feel like, you know, there could be a little like unstuck troubleshooting, like, mm-hmm. you know, that just is the same idea as a flow chart, like pretty much where it's like, okay, so is this true? Yes or no? Like, yeah. So that's, I mean, that's sort of the, once I get the app, just as a to-do list project calendar manager, you know, thing, when I get that ready to test, you know, then I'll start working on the more like interactive coachy part.
But so I'm going to need you then. I'll put it in the show notes if you want me to. If you're making mm-hmm. a list of people or creating a list of people that would like to beta test,
I am
your app, you'll have yeah. to give me a link to that and I will. Yep. Put it in the show notes, the fancy.
In the show notes. Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's, I'm trying to make it all easy to remember. So yeah, but the app is called Do the Thing. And yeah, if you go to, dothething.app, yeah, you can sign up to get updates about it. And yeah, I'm starting a little mailing list. I'm hoping over the summer to do the like, you know, first round of, nice. Yeah, I'm calling it a closed alpha. You know, it'll be the very, you know, sort of skeleton of the app that, you know, you can, you know, start testing it and giving feedback. And not everybody's into that. Some people just want something that's like, yeah, let me know when it's a little bit more mature and I'll try it then, you know. But some people really like to be involved in that, you know, feedback stage. And that's going to be really key to...
yeah, definitely.
You know, making it happen. So, yeah. And anybody wants to get in on that. Yeah. The mailing list sign up is open. And, okay.
And then if they just want to get your book, is that available on Amazon?
Mm-hmm. It is. That's actually where it's available.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's, if you go to, ADHDhomestead.net/order-from-chaos, that, you know, you could, it links from there.
Okay.
But yeah, it's on Amazon. I knew
mine came from Amazon. I wasn't sure if that was the only place you can get it. Okay.
Yeah. For now it is. I have a, you know, an Kindle Select or something. It's a time bound, like exclusive agreement with Amazon.
Okay.
That, yeah, but it, you know, it's also, part of the Kindle Unlimited and the Kindle Owners Lending Library.
Well, I like about your book, and I might have already said this, I don't know. I just like it because it's very, it's through the lens of ADHD and it makes sense. And like I said, it's not just about organizing. It's not just, you know, buy pretty containers and put them here and then close the closet door. You know, it's not that way. It's more like, okay, these are the issues. You have to troubleshoot this way. And you also have to really think about your values and your why, and sort of systemize it for yourself. And I just think it's a different way of looking at organizing. Instead of the Marie Kondo, who I like Marie Kondo, but I don't have the patience for all that. And unless she's going to come to my house and hold my hand.
When her, like a lot of these recommendations are things that make a big mess at the outset. And, you know, sometimes you do have to make a big mess at the outset. But one of the things that I do say in there is, like, okay, you know, you got to get everything up off the floor so you can, like, vacuum the rug, right? You know, if you haul everything out of a closet, you know, and then you don't put it back in, well, all right, so where are we? There's a big mess. And, you know, I knocked all the walls down in a room in our house, and it was like down to the studs for over a year and a half. Like I was so ashamed of that because it was absurd. It was one of those who even does that sort of situations. But you that's tried. Like, yeah, that, well, that, and that is now, you know, my metaphor. And actually like my blog post that just went up yesterday about like cleaning off my desk.
I love that.
The whole thing is like, you have to try to do projects without making the huge mess. Or even if you do, like, it's okay to put stuff into boxes. Like I have boxes next to my desk here of stuff to go through and like digitize, like old notes and pictures and stuff. And I've made peace with the fact that I'm doing that slowly over time. But I have a plan to get it done. It's not going to stay there forever. But, you know, I didn't just pull all this stuff out and leave it there. And there's this book that I really enjoyed, How to Organize Your Life in 1 Week. But, like, you know from the title what the problem is, right? Like, that ain't going to happen in 1 week. Right. Like, the work that she outlines in that book is, like, months, if not years, worth of work.
So
the book that I tried to write was like, you need to get to know yourself and design a system that's going to work for you. And then you can be okay with making gradual progress instead of the like, pull everything out and make a giant mess and like try to hold yourself to like doing this monumental task, which someone with ADHD is just going to be like, I'm going to shut the door and pretend this whole room in my house doesn't exist, which I've definitely done. So I've done that twice, actually. I have pretended a room in my house did not exist for, so this is how I know. And that this is like, that's the need that from which like my approach kind of sprung, because I was like, no, never again.
Well, no. This is a subject for a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
I've actually had people tell me that they can't just do a desk in their office, that they need to do the whole office. And I always say,
me too.
Well, and I always say, but do you have to, or can you do the desk today?
Yeah.
There's a real, for ADHD people, that black and white, it's all or nothing, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's exactly my post from yesterday, is that, you know, my whole office really does need a lot of work. But I can't, there are so many levels on which I can't afford to do that project right now because it's huge. But I could make my desk a better place. Mm-hmm. And I think people with ADHD tend to throw that out.
Yep.
Like not even consider it because like there's this whole project and I don't know how to do it. We have to negotiate that a lot in our house because we live in an old house. So, I mean, old houses have a lot of projects. And as soon as I start talking about something small with my husband, he'll start getting real stressed. Because he's like, yeah, but to do that, we have to do this. And to do that, we have to do this other thing. And then that's the other thing. And then pretty soon, like, he's ballooned it out to, like, well, we can't do anything because it's too much. And, you know, that's a skill in and of itself, like, learning how to do the small project. Because, like, starting a project is so hard. Like, we want to do it right. Like, if we're going to go to all the struggle it takes to even start doing anything, like, we want to start doing the big, impressive project. Like, we don't want to do the, like, you know, little crappy project that, you know, no one's going to be like, wow, you know, and it's not, like, Instagram worthy. You know, and it's, And that's, I mean, it's tough. It's tough to take on the little project, but yeah, I did it from my desk.
You did. I like that post. I thought it was great. Thank you so much for having this conversation. And I think it's such a complicated thing for us, everything from our inboxes to our paper clutter, to our clothing, our homes. It's the space you live in. It's your home. It's just so complicated. And I am so glad that you shared all this insight with us, because, I mean, you think about it in a totally different way than I do, and I love it. But I want more people to read it, and I want more people to listen to this podcast, because I just think that your way of thinking about it and the app is so exciting. I'm going to direct everyone to the ADHD Homestead website, and you have a regular mailing list, right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. No, I have, there's an email list, that I send out my monthly, ADHD gram. And I'm trying to make that more interactive, like, you know, to get feedback from people. And like last month I had a little bit of information about that desk post, and, you know, I invited people like, hey, if you have something you really want to hear about in this post, you know, send, but there's that. And then, I try to post on Instagram more like day in the life type things or life lessons there are ways to stay in touch, and they all have their own sort of little bucket.
On Instagram, I know on Facebook you are the ADHD Homestead.
Yeah.
On Instagram, I feel like your name is your name, right?
Yeah. Jacqueline Paul Writer.
Jacqueline Paul Writer. That's it. Yes.
Yep. Yep. Okay. And then, but there is an ADHD Homestead Instagram that like links back to it. So if people find the ADHD Homestead on Instagram, you can find my personal one. But yeah, that has more, I feel like Instagram, I can be more vulnerable, is kind of the wrong word, but like, you know, talk more about like, you know, struggles or, you know, real life stuff. Whereas, you know, my blog, it has this more like, you know, I'm more in a position of being like strong for other people on the blog, and even in the email.
Not as bad as Facebook. It does not do the same thing to me that Facebook does. It doesn't make me as agitated as Facebook does. But I find it a little.
Yeah.
Jacqueline does have a Facebook page. It is called The ADHD Homestead. So you can find her there or on her website, as well as Instagram as Jacqueline Paul Writer. I know this was a longer episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Jacqueline is one of my favorite people and my favorite resources for sort of real life writing about life with ADHD. If you would like to meet more amazing women like Jacqueline, join me in the ADHD Enclave. We meet 4 times a week to create some structure and stability for ourselves. We talk about everything, life's problems and taking care of a household. I am creating a space for us all to learn, laugh, and grow. Help a girl out and leave me some reviews on iTunes. And I am so excited to see what the future holds. So stick around. And like I always say, we are stronger together.